Imagine just for a second that you have like the most sought after piece of technology on the planet sitting right in front of you. And you take a screwdriver, you pop the lid off the latest NVIDIA B300 module, and you look inside. Naturally, you'd assume the star of the show, the chip that actually crunches all the AI math, the GPU itself.
Right, the logic die. I mean, it's what everyone looks for first. It's the
Yeah,
brain of the whole operation.
exactly. You'd think that brain is the most expensive thing in that box.
Yeah.
But here's the crazy part. It isn't.
No, it's not.
When you actually break down the bill of materials, the memory surrounding that GPU accounts for like somewhere around 40 to 50% of the total cost. I mean, the chip doing the math is literally cheaper than the chips feeding it the data.
Which completely flips our traditional understanding of the hardware landscape upside down.
Yeah.
We are so conditioned to think of computer memory as this, secondary accessory. It's like buying upgraded floor mats for a luxury car.
Right, you buy the processor first and then you just sort of tack on the memory later.
Exactly. But for the operators who are actually running these massive AI models at scale, memory is co-equal. I mean, it is often co-dominant in both cost and availability.
Well, welcome to this deep dive. Today we are taking you into an operator's breakdown of HBM, which stands for High Bandwidth Memory. And our mission for you today is simple. We are going to explore how a single, incredibly difficult to manufacture component became the absolute choke point of the entire AI revolution, and exactly why it recently crowned three brand new trillion-dollar companies.
Yeah, this whole situation is just a masterclass in physics and, well, manufacturing nightmares.
Oh, yeah.
It also perfectly illustrates why just throwing billions of dollars at a bottleneck doesn't always break it open.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to understand why this specific type of memory is totally upending the global market, we first have to understand the bizarre geometry of how it's actually built. And this was honestly the first huge surprise for me in the source material. HBM isn't some magical alien new storage medium, right? It's not a fundamentally new chemistry.
No, not at all. At its core, HBM uses the exact same technology as the standard memory sitting in the laptop or the phone you're using right now.
Really?
Yeah, we're talking about the exact same tiny, leaky capacitors that make up ordinary DRAM.
Okay.
The fundamental building blocks haven't changed in decades. The revolution here, the thing that makes HBM the lifeblood of artificial intelligence, is entirely in the geometry. It's literally in the physical layout of the silicon.
So the sources essentially describe HBM as a normal DRAM, just like rotated 90 degrees.
Visualizing it that way makes perfect sense, actually. Think about a traditional computer setup. Standard DDR5 memory is flat.
Right.
It just sits on a printed circuit board, maybe an inch or two away from the processor, and it communicates over a relatively narrow channel, usually like 64 bits wide.
And because it's far away, and I mean, in the microscopic world of computer chips, an inch or two is basically a cross-country road trip.
Oh, absolutely.
You have to push that data really, really hard to get it there in time.
Right, because distance is the ultimate enemy of efficiency in computing.
Right.
To move data across that physical gap on a motherboard, you have to run that narrow channel at incredibly high clock speeds. You are blasting signals down a long copper trace, and that requires a massive amount of power.
Right, just fighting the physics of the wire.
Exactly. The further the signal travels, the more electrical energy it burns, just fighting the natural resistance of the wire. And the harder you push it, the harder it is to keep that signal clean and fast without interference.
So you can't just like add more channels.
I mean, you can add a few more, sure, but every channel costs you physical pins on the chip, massive amounts of board area, and even more power. It doesn't scale.
Okay, let me try this analogy out on you. Standard DDR5 memory feels like a fleet of really fast sports cars on a long, narrow highway. You're trying to move a lot of people, so you just tell the cars to drive at 200 miles an hour.
That works.
But HBM is like tearing down that highway, taking all those cars, and building a monstrous 1034-lane bridge right next door to the destination.
A 1024-lane bridge that is mere millimeters long.
Right.
That captures the architecture perfectly.
So instead of driving fast, you just have thousands of cars moving at like a leisurely pace. But because the bridge is so unbelievably wide, millions of people still arrive at the exact same time.
Exactly.
But I have to ask, is this just about speed? Because yes, feeding the AI more data is great, obviously, but is there a hidden advantage to this wide and short bet?
Power.
Yeah.
Power is the hidden advantage. And in a modern data center, power is the real currency.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, we are talking about server racks that consume 100 kilowatts of electricity. If you tried to feed a modern AI GPU using standard flat memory, the power required just to move the data back and forth would literally melt the building.
That is insane.
It is. So HBM takes those DRAM dies, stacks them vertically into a tower, and parks that tower just millimeters from the GPU. It delivers a massive fire hose of data 724 bits wide per stack for a fraction of the picojoules per bit.
Wait, let me pause you right there for the listener. A picojoule is like a microscopic fraction of energy.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a tiny whisper of electricity needed to move each piece of data compared to standard memory.
Right. And that tiny whisper of electricity is everything. Because the data barely travels any physical distance, you don't need those screaming high clock speeds to force it across a motherboard.
Makes sense.
Wide and close beats, narrow and fast, every single time in terms of energy. It delivers far more bandwidth per watt, which is honestly the foundational reason these massive AI architectures are even viable in the real world.
Wow.
Without that energy efficiency, the whole AI boom stops dead in its tracks.
But you can't just slap a 12-story tower of memory next to a GPU on a normal, you know, green circuit board. The wiring is just way too dense.
No, you definitely can't.
Which brings us to the foundation of this whole operation and what the sources call the biggest bottleneck in the entire AI supply chain.
Yeah, the physical assembly of this stuff sounds like pure science fiction.
It really does.
Let's build an HBM stack from the bottom up to see why it's so difficult. So at the very bottom, you have what's called a base logic die.
Okay.
Think of this as the foundation and the brains of the tower. It contains the memory controller, the input-output hub, and the test logic. It's the part that actually manages the traffic and shakes hands with the GPU.
So it's an active manager, not just some dumb brick of memory sitting at the bottom.
Exactly. It acts as the switchboard for the whole stack. And on top of that base die, you stack the actual DRAM dies. Today's volume product, known as HBM3E, usually stacks 8 or 12 of these dies on top of each other. And the leading edge of the industry is currently pushing for 16 layers.
Yeah, the sources refer to this as 8 high, 12 high, or 16 high stacks.
Which brings us to the real engineering marvel here.
Yeah.
How do you get all those layers to talk to each other and to the base die?
Yeah, how do you wire that?
Well, you don't run microscopic wires up the outside of the building.
Yeah.
You literally drill straight down through the floors.
Oh, wow.
These are called through-silicon vias, or TSVs.
Through-silicon vias. I imagine drilling through silicon isn't exactly like drilling through drywall, right?
Not quite, no. They have to etch thousands of microscopic holes straight down through the silicon wafers and then fill them with copper.
Thousands of them.
Thousands. Mm-hmm. And that creates these vertical wires threading the entire tower together. These TSVs carry the signal and the power from the base die all the way to the top penthouse layer. They make the stack function as a single electrical object instead of just a pile of separate chips.
So once you have this finished stack, the base die, the DRAM layers, the thousands of vertical copper wires, you still have to connect it to the GPU.
Right.
And an NVIDIA B300 has 8 of these towers ringing the central GPU. 8 stacks, each 24 bits wide.
Yep.
That's an 892-bit wide path just for the memory.
And you cannot run 8,000 independent wires across a standard computer motherboard.
Yeah.
The physical space just, it just doesn't exist.
So they use a special foundation called a silicon interposer.
Exactly.
It's a thin slab of silicon etched with ultrafine wiring, right? The GPU sits in the middle, the HBM towers sit around it, and they all communicate through this underlying slab. Mm. And the entire process of placing these chips onto this silicon interposer with like micron level precision and bonding them together is called CoWoS.
Chip on wafer on substrate.
Okay.
And it is manufactured almost exclusively by TSMC, the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company.
Right.
The physical donning process is just mind-boggling. Mm. Imagine trying to precisely align 8,192 microscopic copper pillars simultaneously.
God.
Drop them onto matching pads that are micrometers wide and permanently solder them together without cracking the ultra-thin silicon.
See, I'm going to push back here on the scarcity aspect because I'm reading the source and it says TSMC has been roughly doubling their CoWoS capacity every single year.
They have, yeah.
Doubling. So if they are scaling their manufacturing that incredibly fast, why is everyone in the tech world still screaming about GPU shortages? How are we still constrained if the assembly lines are multiplying?
Well, what's fascinating here is the brutal, unforgiving economics of packaging. You have to remember that this interposer is itself a giant piece of silicon.
Mm-hmm.
And manufacturing silicon always involves defects. It's just a mathematical reality of the physics. But here is the catch. If there is a single microscopic defect on that large silicon interposer, or if one of those 8,192 microscopic connections fails during the bonding, you don't just throw away the interposer.
Wait, so you don't just lose the packaging. You're telling me you have to throw away a $30,000 GPU because of one bad microscopic wire.
Yes. You scrap the entire finished assembly.
That is wild.
You throw away the hugely expensive GPU, and you throw away thousands of dollars worth of HBM towers that have already been permanently bonded to it.
Because they're already glued down. You can't just, like, pry a silicon chip off and try again on a new board.
Exactly. The cost of a CarOS yield miss is everything sitting on top of it. That is why you cannot just solve this bottleneck by throwing cheap, rapid capacity at the problem.
It has to be perfect.
The manufacturing capacity has to be absolutely perfect, TSMC-grade capacity. It takes years to build facilities and train engineers capable of executing this delicately.
Wow.
So when you read a headline about a GPU shortage, it's almost never a shortage of the math-doing chip.
Right.
It's a shortage of the memory next to it and the incredibly delicate packaging step that marries the two together.
The bottleneck isn't the brains, it's the glue holding the brains to the memory.
Exactly.
But this delicate assembly process is about to get even more complex, right? Because the sources show that the next generation of this memory, HBM4, is fundamentally altering the balance of power across the entire tech industry.
Yeah. To understand why, we have to look at the exponential growth in demand.
Okay.
Just look at the HBM content per flagship GPU over time. In 2022, the NVIDIA H100 had 80 gigabytes of HBM. Mm. By 2025, the B300 will have roughly 288 gigabytes. The memory content per GPU is doubling roughly every 2 years.
So they aren't just selling more GPUs. Every single GPU they sell requires significantly more memory than the one before it to run these newer, smarter AI models. It's like compounding demand on top of compounding demand.
That's exactly it. And the industry's responding with HBM4. Now, HBM4 doesn't just bump up the clock speed. It doubles that physical interface width again.
Wow.
It goes from the 1024 lanes on our metaphorical bridge to 2048 lanes per stack.
That's crazy.
But the truly strategic shift isn't the width, it's the foundation of the tower.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Historically, that base logic die at the bottom of the stack, the switchboard, right, was essentially a cheap commodity part.
Right.
The memory manufacturer just fabricated it themselves using older, cheaper processes. It was just a simple floor for the tower.
It was basic traffic control, nothing special.
But with HBM4, that changes entirely. That base die is now becoming a highly advanced custom logic chip fabricated by a top-tier foundry like TSMC.
And this reshuffles the profit margins of the entire computing world.
Really?
Yes. HBM is transforming right before our eyes. It is going from being a pure commodity memory part that you just order off a spec sheet into a semi-custom logic plus memory product.
Ah, I see.
Whenever a component transitions from a generic commodity to a custom logic piece, it becomes sticky. It becomes proprietary.
Right.
And whoever controls that custom piece captures massive profit margins.
Well, the sources mention that SK Hynix, who is currently the undisputed leader in HBM, is partnering directly with TSMC to build these new base dies.
Which means the reigning champion of memory and the reigning champion of advanced packaging are now joined at the hip to lock in those margins.
Wow.
But then look at Samsung. Samsung's in a unique position because they actually own their own advanced foundry business.
Oh, right.
They don't need to partner with TSMC. They can build the memory towers and the advanced custom-based die entirely in-house.
So they just do the whole thing?
Exactly. It's a massive vertical integration bet. It proves the golden rule of the compute era. The more the technology stack you own and control, the more the financial value you get to keep.
Okay, but if this custom-based die is going to print money for SK, Hynix, and Samsung, the obvious question is, you know, where is the competition?
Right.
Like, why isn't a massively funded Chinese startup, say, someone like CXMT, backed by billions in...
And it's because of the trillion-dollar moat.
Okay.
And what makes this moat so fascinating is that it isn't built out of trade secrets.
Which is wild, because the specification for HBM is completely public.
It is.
It's published by JEDEC, the standardizing body for microelectronics. Anyone, literally anyone, can go online right now and read the exact blueprint for how an HBM stack should function.
Yeah, the recipe is public, but actually cooking the meal in a commercial kitchen is nearly impossible.
Ah, right.
This is why in May 2026, the three major memory makers, SK Hynix, Micron, and Samsung, all crossed a $1 trillion market cap.
Yep.
SK Hynix, which has over 50% market share and is NVIDIA's primary supplier, saw its stock go up tenfold over the trailing year.
Tenfold? For a memory company? I mean, these used to be the most boring, low-margin, boom-and-bust commodity businesses on the stock market. And now they are valued like elite software monopolies.
They repriced into the trillions because the moat protecting them is yield. Yield is the percentage of chips on a silicon wafer that actually work perfectly after manufacturing. We talked about those thousands of microscopic holes, the through-silicon vias. You have to etch thousands of them straight through the silicon layers. And every single one of those copper pillars must be perfectly void-free.
Let's clarify what void-free means here for the listener. We're talking about avoiding microscopic air bubbles inside the metal, right?
Exactly that. If there is even a microscopic air bubble of void trapped inside that copper pillar during manufacturing, it changes the electrical resistance.
Oh, I see.
It acts like a roadblock. The high-speed signal gets distorted or fails entirely, and the whole memory tower is compromised.
Just from one bubble.
Just one. And you have to do this perfectly across 8, 12, or 16 separate layers of silicon, aligning thousands of these pillars on top of each other.
The outline also mentions something called known good die testing, which honestly sounds like an absolute nightmare given what you just described.
Known good die, or KGD, is one of the biggest hurdles. Because the math of failure is so brutal when you stack chips, you can't just stack 12 memory layers and pray they all work.
Right, because if one is bad...
If one die in the middle is dead, you throw away the other 11 perfect dies attached to it.
Ugh, that's rough.
So manufacturers must exhaustively test individual microscopic DRAM dies before they are ever stacked.
But how do you even plug into a single naked chip to test it?
You have to physically touch microscopic probes to the microscopic contact pads on the bare silicon without scratching them or breaking them.
That sounds impossible.
It is incredibly slow, expensive, and difficult. And even if you confirm every single die is perfect before stacking, the act of stacking them introduces a whole new set of physical tortures.
Oh, the heat?
Yes, the heat.
The sources point out that you are dissipating intense heat from the middle of a vertical sandwich. I mean, the inner layers of that 12-story tower have nowhere for their heat to escape. They are insulated by silicon on all sides.
They just sit there and cook. And that heat slows down performance and degrades the materials over time. But honestly, worse than the heat is the physical warpage.
Warpage? Like a piece of wood left out in the rain.
Very similar concept, yeah. But driven by thermal stress. You're stacking ultra-thin sheets of silicon. Some of these layers are thinned down to a fraction of the thickness of a human hair.
Wow.
Naturally, as they heat up and cool down during the bonding process, they want to bow and bend.
Sure.
Imagine stacking wet paper. If a finished 12-high stack bows even slightly at the edges, it will not bond flat onto that silicon interposer we talked about earlier.
And if it's not perfectly flat, those 8,192 connections won't all touch the pads.
Right.
It's ruined.
It's completely useless. So let's look at the compounding math of failure here.
Okay.
If you are moving from an 8-layer stack to a 12-layer stack, it's not just a simple 50% increase in capacity. It is a compounding mathematical fight against the laws of physics.
Yeah.
Let's say you have an individual die that yields at 95%.
Sounds pretty good.
In an 8-layer stack, your chances of the whole tower working are 95% multiplied by itself 8 times.
Okay, yeah.
That's hard enough. But multiply it 12 times, or 16 times for the next generation. The failure rate skyrockets with every single layer you add.
Wait, if you're listening to this and doing the math in your head, that means a 95% perfect chip yields less than a 55% success rate for the 12-layer power.
Exactly.
You're throwing away almost half your product just because you added a few more floors to the building. Moving up the stack height ladder isn't a free upgrade. It's a completely fresh yield fight against physics.
And that brutal difficulty is what turned a historically low-margin commodity business into something the sources call scarce and unclonable.
Wow.
It doesn't matter how much money a competitor throws at a new fabrication plant. Catching up on a yield curve this steep takes years of trial and error. You cannot just buy your way out of the math of failure.
Right.
And by the time a competitor finally matches today's 12-high yield, the leaders have already moved on to the 16-teen generation, and the agonizing chase begins all over again.
This has been absolutely fascinating. For the last 2 years, we've all been calling this the compute era. We've been completely obsessed with the GPU, the chip that does the math. But as we've learned today, the hardest part of the AI revolution and the ultimate bottleneck gating our progress isn't the math at all. It's the micro towers of memory stacked right beside it and that delicate few millimeter slab of silicon holding them all together.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it raises an important question, and it's something I really want to leave you with.
Yeah.
We know the appetite for memory bandwidth is compounding massively. The AI models demand more data constantly, but physical stacking, going from 12 to 16 layers and beyond, is getting exponentially harder due to that trapped heat, the thermal warpage, and the compounding math of yield.
Right.
If the laws of physics dictate that we literally cannot stack these ultra-thin dies any higher without them vowing and failing, will the great AI boom eventually hit a hard ceiling? Not because we lack brilliant computing ideas, or because the math doing GPU can't go faster, but simply because our micro towers of silicon collapse under their own structural limits.
We started this deep dive talking about popping the lid off of B300 and expecting to see this clean, perfectly engineered landscape where the GPU was king. But the deeper you look, the muddier and more chaotic the physics become.
Yeah. It really does.
We aren't just limited by ideas anymore. We're limited by how high we can stack the microscopic bricks without the whole tower falling down. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.